Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. Democracy Now!
We reject the ICC's application for arrest warrants against Israeli leaders. Whatever these warrants may imply, there is no equivalence between Israel and Hamas.
President Biden condemns the International Criminal Court's decision to pursue arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defense Minister Yoav Gallant on war crimes charges over Gaza. We'll speak to war crimes prosecutor Reed Brody, and we'll be joined by renowned Israeli historian Ilan Pape. On a trip to the United States last week, Professor Pape was interrogated for 2 hours by federal agents upon arrival at Detroit Airport about his political views on Gaza, Hamas, and Israel. But first, we'll be joined by the first Jewish appointee to resign from the Biden administration over Gaza.
So I'm an American Jew, and I resigned because I could no longer serve at the pleasure of the president while he's supporting and enabling and funding the genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. Not only is it wrong, but it makes myself and my community here and in Israel less safe.
Lily Greenberg Call was a special assistant to the chief of staff at the Department of Interior. She chose May 15th, the anniversary of the Nakba, to resign. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Gaza, Israeli air attacks in the north of the Gaza Strip have killed at least 18 Palestinians in Jabalia and Beit Lahia. Air strikes also killed at least 5 people today in the southern city of Rafah. The Gaza Health Ministry says at least 85 Palestinians have been killed over the past day, with another 228 wounded. The continued Israeli attacks come a day after the International Criminal Court announced it's seeking arrest warrants for alleged war crimes committed by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, and 3 leaders of Hamas. President Biden condemned the move by the ICC Monday as he spoke at a White House event for Jewish American Heritage Month.
Let me be clear. We reject the ICC's application for arrest warrants against Israeli leaders. Whatever these warrants may imply, there is no equivalence between Israel and Hamas. And it's clear Israel wants to do all it can to ensure civilian protection.
Republicans say they're considering sanctions against the International Criminal Court. Meanwhile, independent Senator Bernie Sanders backed the actions by the ICC, saying, quote, it's imperative the global community uphold international law. Without these standards of decency and morality, this planet may rapidly descend into anarchy, never-ending wars and barbarism, he said. International reactions to the news has been mixed. France, a close ally of Israel, said it supports the ICC's, quote, independence and the fight against impunity in all situations, unquote. Palestinian officials have welcomed the possible arrest warrants while condemning the double standards against Palestinians resisting Israeli occupation. Displaced Palestinians in Rafah weighed in on the decision.
My opinion about the ICC decision is that they've equated the victim with the executioner. They made victim and executioner equal. The criminal, Netanyahu and Gantz, who have killed the people of Palestine for more than 75 years, equal to the Palestinians who have resisted and demanded their rights. The homeland is our right, and we must demand our right.
Meanwhile, the Guardian's reporting Israeli soldiers have been tipping off extremist settlers on the location of aid trucks headed to Gaza, allowing far-right groups to block and vandalize the humanitarian convoys. Deadly Israeli raids continue in the occupied West Bank. At least 7 Palestinians were killed today after Israeli soldiers stormed the city of Jenin again early in the morning. Among the victims were a teacher and a doctor who were on their way to work, and at least one young student who was shot while riding his bike to school. About a dozen others have been reported injured, including a journalist. Schools in Jenin have been evacuated. Israeli forces also made 15 arrests across Ramallah, Nablus, and Tubas, as well as in occupied East Jerusalem. Israel's detained over 8,800 Palestinians since October 7th. A group of New York lawmakers has introduced a measure that would ban New York nonprofits from using tax-deductible donations to fund Israeli settlers and Israeli military units in Gaza and the West Bank. The Not on Our Dime Act would also prohibit organizations from aiding and abetting the resettling of Gaza or supporting Israeli military actions that violate international law. The legislation was first introduced last year by New York Assembly member Zohran Mamdani and State Senator Jabari Brisport. U.S. Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez spoke in favor of the bill at a rally Monday. Over 150 Yale students staged a walkout Monday during their graduation ceremony. Some students wore red gloves to symbolize blood as they demand the Ivy League school divest from Israel. Yale students and faculty also carried signs with the words, "Drop the charges and protect free speech," in defense of the 45 protesters arrested during the police crackdown on Yale. Meanwhile, here in New York, the new school Gaza Solidarity Encampment announced it reached a deal with the University Board of Trustees to hold a vote on divestment by June 14th. The new school has been home to the country's first faculty encampment. In New York State, students at Bard announced all of their demands around investments and transparency have been met days after escalating their protests. The activists said, despite the victory, quote, "There's no such thing as winning in the midst of a genocide," unquote. In Iran, funeral ceremonies have begun for Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi, who was killed in a helicopter crash Sunday, along with the foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian and several other Iranian officials and crew. Thousands of mourners gathered today in the city of Tabriz for a procession. Other ceremonies are planned in the days, coming days, including tomorrow in Tehran. Raisi's burial is set to take place Thursday in his home city of Rashad. Iranian state media said the crash was caused by a, quote, technical failure. French President Emmanuel Macron is heading to New Caledonia and sending in more troops as tensions continue to rise in the Pacific archipelago. Australia and New Zealand are evacuating their citizens. 6 people have been killed in recent clashes. The crisis was triggered after France moved to allow French residents who've lived in New Caledonia for 10 years to vote in provincial elections. Some 40% of the population of New Caledonia is Kanak, but the island has been under French rule since its colonization in the 19th century. Kanak activist Vero Chuloué says France is bringing civil war back to New Caledonia.
Not only the Kanak, we have some Polynesian people, people from Vanuatu here who lives here, Fiji, and some people from France as well. They are helping Kanak people. Not only the Kanak people, not only the political independence party here, everyone here, but it's really hard because we are really scared about the police, the soldier, French soldiers, and we are scared about the anti-Kanak militia terrorist group.
In Greece, the trial's opening for 9 Egyptian men accused of smuggling migrants in the Pylos shipwreck that killed some 600 people in June last year. But the accused men say they're being scapegoated and are themselves victims. Human Rights Watch is warning the trial risks overlooking the criminal responsibility of Greek authorities. The majority of victims of the shipwreck were from Pakistan. Others were from Syria and Egypt. This is survivor Inzimam Makbul speaking from Athens Monday.
I want to give me justice. All people died. Pakistani, 400 people, only 12 people rescued. All the families in Pakistan, people died in sea. All day call in mother, father, sister and wife call me, where is my husband, where is my brother, where is my cousin, where is tell me, what we tell him.
Back in New York, prosecutors rested their case Monday in Donald Trump's criminal hush money in 2016 election interference trial. Trump's lawyers called witness Robert Costello. He's an attorney who's accused Michael Cohen of lying, but his testimony soon devolved after he complained about prosecutors' objections, as well as the judge, leading Judge Juan Merchan to reprimand him and briefly clear the courtroom. At one point, Judge Merchan asked Costello, quote, are you staring me down right now? Meanwhile, Cohen admitted under questioning by the defense that he stole $60,000 of Trump Organization money to make up for a cut to his annual bonus in 2016. In other Trump news, Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis and Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee, two key figures in Georgia's sweeping racketeering case against Trump, are both on the ballot today as Georgians head to the polls for state primaries. In more related news, Rudy Giuliani was served Friday with notice of his indictment in Arizona's 2020 election subversion case. Agents from Arizona's Attorney General's office served Giuliani the papers at his 80th birthday party in Palm Beach, Florida, reportedly just after guests sang him happy birthday. And Larry Bensky, award-winning reporter and veteran KPFA radio broadcaster, died Sunday at the age of 87. Bensky was the national affairs correspondent for Pacifica Radio from 1987 to 98, notably covering the 1987 Iran-Contra hearings and the 9/11 Commission hearings, among other historical events. Larry Bensky also hosted KPFA's public affairs show, Sunday Salon, and later the classical music show, Piano. He also wrote for various publications, including The Nation, and was a professor. In this KPFA clip, Bensky reflects on why he chose the career of journalism.
I thought that bringing people information about things would stir things up. But it's not that bringing people the information automatically brings a cure to humanity's ills and we wouldn't have so many ills. It's that if you don't do it, it's certainly not going to change. So that's how I became what I think of as an activist journalist.
Larry Bensky was also one of the original co-hosts of Democracy Now! In 1996. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
On May 15th, Lily Greenberg Call, a special assistant to the chief of staff at the Department of the Interior and a political appointee of President Biden, resigned from her position in protest of the administration's policies in Gaza. In doing so, she became the first known Jewish appointee to resign from the Biden administration over Gaza. In a four-page letter of resignation she released publicly, Greenberg Call wrote, quote, I can no longer in good conscience continue to represent this administration amidst President Biden's disastrous continued support for Israel's genocide in Gaza, unquote. Lily Greenberg Call chose May 15th as the date of her resignation because it marked the anniversary of the Nakba, Arabic for catastrophe, when up to 900,000 Palestinians were driven from their homes and displaced in 1948 during the founding of Israel. In her resignation letter, she wrote, quote, Nakba and Shoah, the Hebrew word for Holocaust, mean the same thing, catastrophe. I reject the premise that one people's salvation must come at another's destruction. I am committed to creating a world where this does not happen, and this cannot be done from within the Biden administration, she wrote. Lily Greenberg Call joins us today in our New York studio. Lily, welcome to Democracy Now! Thanks so much for joining us. If you can talk about the significance of the date you chose and why you have decided to resign.
Thanks for having me, Amy. So, as I said in my resignation letter, you know, Nakba and Shoah mean the same thing. I was raised with a fairy tale about the Nakba. The Nakba was something that I, you know, was not really told about, and if anything, it was minimized and trivialized. Was raised with this idea that Israel was a land without a people for a people without a land, And, you know, so if there's no Palestinian society, if there's nothing to be destroyed, then there's nothing to mourn. So I felt as a Jewish person that it was particularly important for me to acknowledge the significance of the Nakba and the Nakba that has never really ended, that continues to this day. And, you know, as I mentioned, there's something devastating about the parallels between, you know, the same word, Nakba and Shoah, and the idea that what many Jews see as our salvation in the formation of the State of Israel came at the expense of Palestinian freedom. And so I want us to reject that premise, the idea that Jewish safety and Palestinian freedom are at odds with each other, and understand that any system that requires that, you know, requires the oppression of one people for another is inherently unsafe.
And could you tell us, how did your Jewish faith lead you to make this decision?
Yeah, so I mean, I was raised very much steeped in Jewish community. I went to Jewish day school. I have like 20 years of Jewish education. I did, you know, traditional Jewish text study in high school. And a lot of the values that I learned in that, I internalized some really beautiful values, right? There's this idea of pikuach nefesh in Judaism, which means saving a life, and it supersedes any other commandment. You are allowed to break any commandment if it means saving a life. We also say to save a life is to save the whole world. There's this idea of B'Tselem Elohim, that every person is made in the image of God. You know, and so those values, in addition to the fact that Judaism is really steeped in a justice-oriented ethos, that we fight against authority. You know, Jews have been the victims of justice, of violence, of persecution, of displacement throughout our history, right? So I feel that I am really living in my Jewishness, in the essence of what I was raised with, by standing up for Palestinians and by demanding their freedom.
And your views on the Israeli state have evolved over the years. In 2019, as a college student at UC Berkeley, you served as president of Bears for Israel, which is affiliated with AIPAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. Can you talk about the evolution of your views?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, as I mentioned, I was raised deeply involved in Jewish community, and within that community, it was very pro-Israel. There was no daylight between being Jewish and support for the State of Israel in the community I was raised in. And I also, you know, I believed in Israel as, like I said, the sort of salvation of the Jewish people, the way to protect Jews from anti-Semitism. And I grew up experiencing anti-Semitism from non-Jewish people in my life and in communities. And so it was really powerful for me to advocate for Israel. But I would say, you know, as I got a little older, over the past 8 years or so, there two things started to happen at once, or at the same time. So the first was that my world started to expand. I was able to get to know Palestinians, Palestinian Americans. I worked with some Syrian Palestinian refugees in Greece. I saw for myself some of the injustices that Palestinians face in Israel-Palestine, the checkpoints, you know, the system of apartheid. And started to, you know, those, they didn't feel in alignment with my values, right? And with the kind of country that, you know, the kind of world that I want to live in. So that was happening. I also studied Arabic and just, you know, had all this exposure to Palestinian culture and life. And at the same time, the coalition of people that I was, you know, advocating for Israel with through AIPAC started, as Trump came to power, as the Israeli government shifted to the right. And I started to see these people who I had spent years doing pro-Israel advocacy with, in particular, you know, the evangelical Christians, support Trump and support right-wing fascists here in the United States, and people who were, you know, aligning themselves with white supremacists and anti-Semites, right? And so I started to realize, okay, maybe these people aren't here because they're invested in Jews and Jewish safety, you know, they couldn't care about us if they were aligning with people who were so clearly anti-Semitic and harmful to my communities. And so both of those things together led me to this realization that I had been told a lie, right? And that the status quo is untenable. And that not only is it devastating for Palestinians, right? But I think October 7th made it very, very clear that it also doesn't keep Israelis safe. And that if we wanted to actually create a thriving future for Israelis, for Palestinians, for Jews, for the communities that we care about here in America, something has to change.
I wanted to play some of what President Biden had to say earlier this month at the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum's Days of Remembrance.
driven by ancient desire to wipe out the Jewish people off the face of the earth, over 1,200 innocent people, babies, parents, grandparents, slaughtered in their kibbutz, massacred at a music festival, brutally raped, mutilated, and sexually assaulted.
President Biden made those comments in April. In December, he spoke at a Hanukkah holiday reception at the White House.
My commitment to the safety of the Jewish people and the security of Israel and its right to exist is independent, as an independent Jewish state is unshakable. Folks, were there no Israel, there wouldn't be a Jew in the world that was safe.
Greenberg, call your response.
I don't think Jews are safe right now, and I don't think it's, you know, I think that part of that is the status quo in Israel. And what makes Jews less safe is these comments from President Biden. I think, you know, continually using this message of Jewish safety as a smokescreen for Israel's slaughter of Palestinians makes Jews less safe. It enables anti-Semitism. And I just want to say that, of course, what Hamas did on October 7th is atrocious. There were people in my community, you know, among those people that he's speaking about. But it's very clear that the Israeli government is not prioritizing bringing the hostages home. You know, if they cared about that, they would not be bombing the densely populated area that they're in. You know, again, I am so angry at the president that, you know, that he is using my community as justification for this slaughter, as, you know, making us the face of the American war machine. I don't think that makes us safe. And if he really cared about Jewish safety, he wouldn't be doing that.
I wanted to ask you what the reaction has been among your former colleagues in the Biden administration. You worked both for Kamala Harris and for President Biden. What's your sense of the people within the bureaucracy of government, how they're feeling about the continuing American support for Israel's war in Gaza?
There's widespread sentiment within all levels of the administration and all agencies that the president's continued support for Israel's assault on Gaza is disastrous. It's disastrous for American foreign policy, for sentiment towards Americans abroad. It's disastrous here at home. And it's very devastating that the leadership of the administration is not only not listening to their colleagues, but to the majority of the American people who want a ceasefire, who are horrified by what's happening in Gaza, and who've made their voices very clear.
Talk about the power of AIPAC right now. And do you think it's diminishing, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee? And also, do you feel that the consensus, the Democratic establishment consensus, is breaking at this point? On the one hand, you have these massive protests across the country. President Biden saying, no, he's not listening to them. Then he says he's halting 2,000-pound bombs to Israel. But then within a few days, he announces $1 billion worth of weapons to Israel.
Yeah, you know, I think the Democratic Party in particular has to make a choice. They have to decide if they're going to align themselves with a group like AIPAC that, you know, supports and funds and enables insurrectionists and white supremacists and, you know, and take money from the same people who fund the NRA and big oil. You know, people, those groups are completely blacklisted from the Democratic Party. So are we going to align ourselves with those people and take money from them? Or are we going to choose to uplift and support progressive champions who are fighting for a multiracial democracy and the type of country that we know that we deserve and that we want? And yeah, I do think the consensus is starting to shift a little bit. I think AIPAC realizes that their power is diminishing, in particular within the Democratic Party, which is why they are, you know, making this kind of shift to the right. And I think, yeah, again, the Democratic Party has to make a choice.
And your journey from AIPAC and CAMRA, if you can explain what that is, to where you are now, and if you're finding more and more of your friends back then are actually shifting.
I think so. Yeah. I think it is very challenging and hard to, you know, when you grow up in the communities that I'm from, it's very hard to change. And also when, you know, a lot of Jewish people, unfortunately, we have internalized this message that Jewish safety and Palestinian freedom are at odds with each other, right? And that to ensure the safety of the Jewish people, this is unfortunately we have to be okay with what the status, with the status quo and with what Israel is doing. And I understand that. I understand our fear of annihilation after the Holocaust. I understand the fear of anti-Semitism. I feel it in myself. But we cannot let that fear blind us and trick us into somehow thinking, you know, into accepting the slaughter of Palestinians. And I really urge people in my community to think about what it means for us to accept that and to be the face of that.
Finally, the response within the Interior Department. I mean, the Secretary of Interior is the first Native American cabinet member, mm-hmm. first indigenous camera member, the former New Mexico Congress member, Deb Haaland. Her response.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of folks that I know across the administration have been supportive and understanding. You know, like I said, there's widespread dissent and sentiment within the administration that what the president is doing is disastrous. And, you know, I'll say that I may no longer be in the federal government right now. I might not be in this administration, but I do feel that I am here upholding my oath that I took to serve the American people, to listen to them. And I'm fighting for a country that we deserve, for a shared future for Israelis and Palestinians and for our communities here in America. And I don't see that the president is doing that.
Lily Greenberg-Kahl, thanks so much for being with us. The first known Jewish political appointee to resign over President Biden's policies on Gaza. She'd been working as special assistant to the chief of staff at the Interior Department. She also worked for Biden's election as well as Kamala Harris's. Coming up, President Biden condemns the International Criminal Court's decision to pursue arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the defense minister. We'll speak with war crimes prosecutor Reid Brody and the renowned Israeli historian Ilan Pappe. Stay with us. Twins and Harold Budd. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. President Biden's condemned the International Criminal Court's decision to pursue arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Defense Minister Yoav Gallant on war crimes charges over the assault on Gaza. On Monday, ICC Chief Prosecutor Karim Khan outlined specific charges against Netanyahu and Gallant, including stealing as a method of warfare and, quote, extermination. The ICC also sought arrest warrants for three leaders of Hamas, Yahya Sinwar, Ismail Haniyeh, and Mohammed Deif, for war crimes, including extermination and murder, the taking of captives, torture, rape, and other acts of sexual violence. Speaking at a Jewish American Heritage Month event at the White House Monday, President Biden defended Israel and called the charges against Netanyahu and Gallant outrageous.
Let me be clear. We reject the ICC's application for arrest warrants against Israeli leaders. Whatever these warrants may imply, there is no equivalence between Israel and Hamas. And it's clear Israel wants to do all it can to ensure civilian protection. But let me be clear. Contrary to allegations against Israel made by the International Court of Justice, what's happening is not genocide. We reject that.
Israel's also facing a separate case brought by South Africa at the International Court of Justice, in which the court ruled in January there was a plausible risk Israel's committing genocide in Gaza. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called the ICC announcement a disgrace, saying, quote, "I reject with disgust the Hague prosecutor's comparison between democratic Israel and the mass murders of Hamas," unquote. Hamas issued a separate statement denouncing the request to arrest its leaders, accusing the ICC chief prosecutor of trying to, quote, equate the victim with the executioner, unquote. Hamas said it has the right to resist Israeli occupation, including armed resistance. In Europe, both